This is Cam.
And I'm Jen.
And you're listening to
Our True Crime Podcast.
This is Edward October, and I'm here with my friend, Rollo, the devil doll. You see, I must explain. Like all demonic ventriloquist dummies, Rollo has a problem with swearing. Rollo, stop it. We're here to tell everyone that Our True Crime Podcast may not be appropriate for all listeners.
Because they're so filthy!
Rollo, it's not that. Jen and Cam would like us to remind everyone that they discuss subject matter that may be disturbing to some listeners, especially children.
Oh, your mother!
Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, this is Heath.
And this is Daphne.
And we're the hosts of Going West, a true crime podcast,
where we discuss various murders, disappearances, and serial killers.
Each week, we go into the gory details of a new case.
Like episode 5, which is about Dorothy Jane Scott, a single mother who was receiving threatening phone calls by a stalker and then mysteriously disappeared.
Or the terrifying case of Dayton Leroy Rogers, the most prolific serial killer in Oregon history.
You can find us on our Instagram at Going West Podcast or check out our website, goingwestpodcast.com.
You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Stitcher, and Spotify.
So make sure to check out our episodes and leave a review.
Everybody in the world, keep it real and stay weird.
Cheerio.
It is in human nature to have extremely enjoyable feelings that make you feel guilty. Join me, your host, the one and only Father Sin, every week while I delve into the inner workings of the human mind in my own twisted and sinful way on The Sinful Show, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Exciting true crime do you have for us today?
Well, I have a story that takes place in Missouri.
Missouri.
Do you say Missouri or Missouri?
Missouri.
You say St. Louis, Missouri? Yeah, so do I.
St. Louis, Missouri.
Yeah, so do I. Okay, anyway. All right, I'm going to take, you ready to go?
I'm ready.
SpongeBob. All right. So it's 11:15 p.m. on April 4th, 1991, and 20-year-old Angela Marie Hammond is talking to her boyfriend, Rob Schaefer, on a payphone located in a parking lot of the Food Barn. You know it's a small town.
Food Barn, yeah.
The store, which was located at Jefferson and 2nd Street in Clinton, Missouri, also happened to be approximately 7 blocks from her boyfriend Rob's house. Angela had just phoned Rob to explain to him that she was too tired to come over to his house like they had originally planned earlier in the day at a barbecue, and instead thought she would go home and take a nice hot bath. Now there's good reason for Angela to be overly tired because Angela was 4 months pregnant. Aww. She and Rob were going to be welcoming a baby very soon, and they could not be more thrilled. As the two are talking and laughing, Angela notices something strange. She becomes uneasy and tells Rob. This would be the last time the two would ever speak. In November of 1990, 19-year-old Angela met Rob Schaefer. Schaefer was an 18-year-old high school star athlete. He had planned to join the military. They fell quickly in love, as you know, little lovebirds often do.
And what month was this?
November of 1990.
Okay. So they were high school. So.
Yes. Yes. She's 19. She's a little bit older than him.
Oh, cradle robin.
Yeah. And in the following year, in January 1991, she had told Rob that they're expecting. He was actually happy about the news, and they were going to make it work. Rob proposed to her, and Angela, of course, said yes. Young love. Times are different back then, right? Run. No, just kidding. Angela Marie Hammond was born on February 9th, 1971.
Steve's age.
To Marcia and Chris Hammond. The Hammond family lived in Kansas City for Angela's first 4 years of life, and then they located to Clinton, Missouri, where Marcia's parents, Lloyd and Elizabeth Young, were living.
Clinton's up north, correct? Like in the northeast count?
Clinton, Missouri is a small rural town populated by about 9,000. It's located in Henry County, also happens to be the county seat. Woo-woo! Clinton boasts that it has, I thought this was so cute, it has the largest downtown square in all of Missouri.
Wow.
Right? It's cute. It's very small townish. Very charming. It's kind of a Midwest town where everybody knows everybody, a little bit of knowledge about everybody in the town. Farming and factory jobs were the big things. And football season was really big when it rolled around. Everybody was at the high school football game on a Friday night supporting their Clinton High Cardinals. Go Cards!
Woo!
The newly engaged couple soon moved in together at a rented trailer home and started planning their life together. Now, Angela was working at a local bank, which, side note, that's the only job I've ever been fired, as a night processor, and she was taking courses at Central Missouri State University in Warrensburg. Go Mules!
Mules!
That's my first year I went, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Warrensburg is located about 30 miles from where they lived, and Rob was still planning on enlisting in the military later that summer. So they're, you know, they're doing well.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad to see they were going to college.
Yes. Smart kid. Cute. They were cute, too. So it was just 4 months later that things would change in these young lovers' lives. It was the evening of Thursday, April 4th, 1991. Angela and Rob went to Angela's mother's house for a family barbecue. Shortly after 9 p.m., Angela and Rob decided to head back to Clinton because he had plans to be at his mom's house, Carol's house, Carol Schaefer. By 10 p.m., he needed to babysit his younger brother for a little bit. Rob and Angela had agreed to meet up later that night when Rob's mom had returned, and then his baby brother would be taken care of. Angela dropped him off at his mom's house, and she decided to go hang out with one of her good friends named Kyla. And much like small towns, we can relate to this, they would go cruise the downtown square, and you know, just kind of run into people, talk to them as they're in their car. And,
is that the biggest square?
That is the largest square in the state of Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Or the county
square. Didn't look that big either, but whatever.
Hey, everybody's got to brag about something.
So at approximately 11:15 p.m., Angela and Kyla parted ways for the night. Okay, so she was supposed to go back and see Rob. Angela, by this time, and remember, she's 4 months pregnant, is pretty exhausted. So she decided she was going to call Rob from the payphone. Instead of meeting up with him, she was just going to go back to the trailer, back to their house, and soak in a bath, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they continued to speak on the phone for 30 minutes, which I thought was more, right?
On a payphone?
Yes. So it was about 11:45 p.m., okay? So it's almost midnight.
I guess local calls would be free?
So during the phone call, Angela...
No, you hang up first.
No, you
hang up.
No.
1, 2, 3, together, okay?
1, 2, 3.
Are you still there?
Yes.
That was probably 20 minutes of it.
Yeah, right. Okay. During the phone call, Angela noticed a man circling the block several times in an older model green Ford F-150 pickup truck.
Mm-hmm. That's about right for Missouri.
Right. It could be every single
any
male.
Mm-hmm.
She was bothered by this, obviously, and she told Rob. She was getting, you know, pretty freaked out, pretty scared. It was only minutes later that the driver pulled over near her and stepped outside of his truck and walked toward the unoccupied phone booth next to her.
Oh,
so I guess
still scary. Yeah.
Oh, very. Seconds later, he returned to his truck, grabbed a flashlight, and started waving it around as if he were searching for something. I saw Silence of the Lambs. That never ends well. Trying to kind of ease the tension that she was feeling, I guess, Angela asked if he needed to use her phone, the phone that she was on. And he told her no, and then a few seconds of silence was followed by a horrifying scream that Rob could hear on the other side of the phone. So Rob, not very far away, he was at his mom's house, dropped the phone immediately and ran to her location. Small town, he knows exactly where she is. So on his way to get her, he notices a truck that she had described matching, getting ready to pass him, coming the other way.
Right.
He said that there was a woman struggling with the driver, and then he heard the woman scream, "Robbie," out loud.
How heartbreaking.
So he put his vehicle in reverse, made a sharp U-turn, to try to chase the truck.
I thought you said he was running there.
No. Well, running. Like,
he ran to the car.
Okay. Yeah, ran to her aid. Sorry.
Gotcha. Because I was like going to say, why didn't he take the car?
He did the sharp U, started chasing. It was determined that he went about 2 miles. And then, you know, we talk about this all the time, how this just things happen and it has to, the stars align, things fall into place, whatever. His transmission malfunctioned.
Oh.
And it stalled in the middle of the road.
And Rob's did.
Rob's did. So all he could do was see the truck with the struggling woman, which...
His love of his life with his unborn child.
Driving away.
Oh, God.
With his car broken down. Rob had no choice, but he had to walk back to town. So a passing motorist noticed him and picked him up and took him immediately to the police station. He informed the police, you know, what had occurred, what he witnessed, and... all that stuff, all the, right. the incident. So Rob explained to the police that Angela had described the driver as male, and he was filthy and bearded. He was wearing coveralls, dark-colored baseball hat, eyeglasses, and he had a full-grown beard with a mustache. The truck he was driving was a green Ford F-150 with a white top, and he thought it to be approximately from the late 60s to early 70s. There was some partial damage on the left side front fender, and on the rear window was a mural of a fish jumping out of water.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously...
It's any truck in Missouri.
Yes, but very detailed. Right. Very detailed. Right. I mean, that's pretty good. A composite sketch of the person of interest was created. That was met with a little bit of scrutiny later on because it had left out some key characteristics that Angela had described to Rob. Police sketch did.
Right.
As is often the case, the police would be skeptical of
the boyfriend.
Of course, Rob.
And especially because she was pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Not yet married. Not that that matters, but just saying. Obviously, they thought this was a little too convenient, a little too weird that he would witness this, hear about
it is, but disappear.
They did, however, find his vehicle undrivable, exactly where he said it was. And it was shortly after that they found Angela's car abandoned at the shopping center parking lot with her purse still inside. Detective Damon Parsons of the Clinton Police Department notified Marsha on what had happened and where they were at that very moment. Marsha contacted Angela's dad, Chris, who immediately made the trip to Clinton and ended up staying there for several weeks, as most people would, right?
Right.
To try to find their daughter. In the first week of the investigation, Rob was considered the prime suspect of her disappearance. He passed a polygraph test, and two witnesses did come forward claiming that they saw the truck that Rob had described to police. So he was eventually ruled out, which always makes me wonder about all the lost time, you know, when
that takes.
Yeah, because you focus on somebody.
You would hope that they could, you know, have one person focus on them.
You know, it happens a lot, though. I mean, because sometimes you'd think if it quacks like a duck, walks like a duck, it's a duck, you know? Sometimes but then often it's not. And that's, I mean, how many times are people...
But the majority of it is usually somebody that you know.
Yeah, that's exactly. So, we're chatty today. Police continued interviewing, friends and family, questioning them, looking for extra details. They focused on Angela's ex-boyfriend for a little bit. His name was Bill Barker. He was 17 years old. There were rumors going around that he was, in fact, the father of Angela's baby.
Oh.
But he denied those allegations, and into looking further, he also was no longer considered a suspect. The community rallied around. There was missing posters up all over the place. They were plastering all the storefront windows of the town. Very small, as I've stated. So this was huge news.
Right.
Everybody knew Angela. Everybody knew she was missing. Everybody knew the story. There were over 250 volunteers that came out to conduct an air and ground search, looking all over Clinton for any signs of her, any clues, anything. They checked everything, abandoned buildings, abandoned water wells, county roads, deep in the woods. They looked it all over. 11 days later, the Clinton Police Department contacted the Missouri Rural Crime Scene Squad, seeking help with the investigation. 25 police officers from 15 neighboring counties were sent in to help. The Missouri Highway Patrol also started looking through their vehicle database to see if they could locate a truck similar to that. Do you want to take a stab at how many there were?
150,000.
not that many, but still.
Okay. Just in that area?
Yeah.
Oh, not in the whole state of Missouri.
It's probably the whole state, but still. Okay. I mean, this is still a lot. It's a green Ford pickup with a mural, you know?
Mm-hmm.
1,600.
Oh, yeah.
1,600 potential pickup trucks matched what was described to Rob through Angela. It's been 11 days, though. Police were starting to become very frustrated, I guess,
mm-hmm.
is a good word for it, perplexed. How could a small town with so few people, how could this happen and nobody see anything, nobody know anything? Was it a passerby? Like, how could this happen, basically? So what they started to do was look at some nearby similar stories from around that area, disappearances that had happened, any kidnappings, anything like that. And so what they came up with was this. Max Creek, Missouri. Max, M-A-C-K-S, Missouri. Never heard of it.
What's it called?
Max, M-A-C-K-S, Max.
Max.
It's a small town with a population of just over 500 residents.
Oh, very small, yeah.
Saturday, January 19th, 1991, 42-year-old Trudy Darby was working the night shift at the local K&D convenience store. Never work a gas station overnight.
No.
It's terrible. At approximately 10 p.m., Trudy was in the process of closing up the store for the night when she noticed three men lingering just outside the store. Now, she was feeling a little weird, obviously,
right.
So she called her son, Waylon Darby.
Aww.
Such a Missouri name, isn't
Waylon.
It? Waylon. She asked him to come up there because she was feeling kind of scared. So her son said, of course, and arrived 10 minutes later. But his mom was nowhere to be found. 2 days later, on January 21st, 1991, Trudy's nude body was discovered 15 miles away in Little, I think it's Niagara River. She had been shot twice in the head by a .38 caliber. About 1 month later, Wednesday, February 27th, 1991, another case that was pretty similar occurred 80 miles away in Nevada, Missouri.
Nevada.
Cheryl Ann Kinney is a 30-year-old wife, mother of two, and she was working at the Quality Convenience Store located on Business 71 Highway. Again, it was 10 p.m., and she was in the store with the store janitor and a male customer. Now, the store typically stayed open until midnight, but it was pretty slow, so she decided she was going to close up shop a little bit early, and she went ahead and told the janitor that he could, I mean, custodian. That's a better word for it.
Custodian is the most important person in the job.
That's right, buddy. And she told the custodian that he could go ahead and leave early. So she proceeded to count her drawer and put the money back into the back room.
So she let the custodian leave before she counted the money?
Yep.
Ooh, no.
Mm-hmm. At 10:17, that's so creepy to me, too, that this is like that exact time. You know what I mean? The timelines and stuff? Like,
well, they can do it.
I know, but that's, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just, at 10:17 p.m., she set the store's alarm system and made her way outside to her white Chevrolet in the parking lot. Now, it's after this that they're not really sure what happened, but she never returned home mm-hmm. and has not ever been seen since.
Really? They've never found her? But they do think that it was
foul play. Stay tuned. Summer 1994. Mm-hmm. It's been 3 years since Trudy was found murdered in the river. Her abduction and murder was finally solved. And the perpetrators? It's pretty shocking.
Wasn't her son, was it?
15-year-old Jesse Rush and his half-brother, Marvin Cheney. They were arrested after Jesse had visited Kansas City and, as they so often do, bragged to his friends that he was responsible for Trudy's murder and that he had successfully got away with it.
Not any longer.
Jesse's friends, thank God, were shocked and immediately alerted police.
Good. As they should.
15 years old. Isn't that terrible?
What brings a person to
do that? So police interrogated him, and he did, in fact, confess to the crime. Not only did he confess to the crime, he did not hold back any of these terrible, grisly details.
They love to talk about them.
So I'm going to tell you all this, and part of it's a little, I like to say, spicy. It's a little...
There's a lot of bad words.
There's some bad words.
And
it's pretty graphic.
So if you're listening at work or anything like that, you might want to plug in your headphones now.
Mute. So 15-year-old Jesse Rush said that he, his half-brother, Marvin Cheney, and another accomplice had planned the abduction of Trudy beforehand. This was all planned out.
Did they ever come up with who the third accomplice was?
They entered the store, held her up at gunpoint. They stole $220.
That's it?
Yep. From the cash register. And they forced her into their vehicle. She attempted to defend herself. Thank God. And of course, that just
pissed them off.
Yes. Made them very angry. They transported her to a nearby barn where they sexually and physically assaulted her. Afterward, they shot her once in the head and put her body in the trunk of their car and took her to Little Niagara River to dispose of her. When they opened the trunk, they noticed she was still breathing, so they shot her once more and discarded her body. I can't believe people exist in this world like that. I really can't. A few months later, on December 24th, it was Christmas Eve, 1994, Trudy's father, Wilbert Bletcher, passed away at the age of 69 years old. Before he died, he expressed that he just wanted to be alive long enough to see justice brought to Trudy. 6 years following, on November 21st, 2000, Trudy's mother, Betty Jean Thompson, passed away at 74 years old. Jesse's in jail now. He's awaiting trial, and he's become, you know, buddy with a couple of the inmates there, one of whom is named Edward Thomas.
Oh, if you're going to say Kemper, I was going to scream, but okay.
Thomas, who he befriended because he believed he was a lawyer and that could help him lessen his charges of abduction and murder.
What?
Say what?
Okay,
yes.
That's confused. I'm confused.
No,
Thomas,
Jesse
is the last name?
Okay, listen. Listen. Listen, Linda.
No, I'm trying to, but
no,
I was
no.
having a hard time.
He's a dork. Just think about that. Like, he's a dummy. So while Jesse was in jail, right, awaiting trial, he became friendly with several of the inmates.
Right.
One of which was named Edward Thomas.
Okay, that's where I got confused.
Who he befriended because he believed that Thomas was a lawyer in jail that could help him reduce his sentences.
I get confused with the men that have two first names.
I got you. Okay, now here's where we get into the letter.
This is where Edward Thomas is a narc?
Yes. Okay. So here's a letter he wrote. It does have some bad words, and I'm not used to saying these words, so bear with me, Jen. Really not.
Right.
Okay, some of these I am, but not the other ones. So here's his letter, and it states.
Explicit.
It is explicit, and it states, I just wish my brother would have done like I said at the barn and burnt that bitch up. But that pussy-ass Cheevers and Perel decided to take that bitch to a fucking river instead. And let me add here. These are misspellings and stuff, so it's kind of hard to understand quite what he's saying. I was too fucked up to argue with All I wanted to do was fuck that bitch, then shoot her in the head to watch her brains come out. Sounds cool, huh? If the bitch would have not moved in the trunk at the river, my brother wouldn't have had to shoot her in the head again just to have the cops find a shell. The stupid motherfucker, the only smart thing we did was have Marshall's brother Greg burn the barn. Otherwise, the motherfuckers would have a lot on us. I'm glad they don't know everything else we did or I'd be on death row. And let me just mention, there's only like two periods in that whole paragraph. Mm-hmm. So that's how it kind of sounded like that. In another letter he sent to Thomas, Jesse alluded that he and Chaney had committed many more crimes. So this letter states, I never told you about them, other bitches, because if it gets found by accident, it can get us involved in killing them other fucking bitches. The cops don't even know about my brother and me killing any other bitches except Max Creek. Them other bitches in my last letter to you were both like that bitch in Max Creek. We all tortured the bitches, then fucked the dog shit out of them. Ugh. What a nice guy. So Max...
At 15.
Yes, Max Creek was the other one that has not yet been...
Found.
Yes. 3 years later, April 1997, Jesse Rush and Marvin Chaney were sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Good.
Rush was transported to South Central Correctional Facility in Licking, Missouri. Chaney was imprisoned at the maximum security Potosi Correctional Center.
Oh, close.
Right by us in Mineral Point, Missouri. In September of 2017, Chaney passed away at the age of 56 years old.
Wow.
Due to natural causes. Let's go back to Angela's disappearance.
Okay.
She disappeared, as we know, in 1991. In October of 1991, a new possible lead had come from a man named Russell Smith. Smith was living in Manitoba, Canada. He decided to visit some family living in Elrick, Missouri. He hadn't any knowledge regarding anything about Angela, the case, any of the circumstances surrounding it, until he saw a missing person's poster with her face on it. Once he did, he immediately contacted the Clinton Police Department. He claims that during September, he witnessed a woman matching Angela's description getting inside a green pickup truck that had a white top and a mural on the rear window after leaving a drugstore in Manitoba, Canada. Smith's allegation caused the Clinton Police Chief Bob Pattison to contact a sergeant in the Royal Canadian Mounted Police to alert them to this clue or development. He followed up on the sighting. Now, Angela was 4 months pregnant at the time of her disappearance, so by that, it would mean she would have already given birth to the child. So they went and visited all the area hospitals and baby stores in the area with Angela's photograph to see if anybody remembered her, but nobody could recognize her or right. remembered seeing her. So just some side notes to wrap this all up. The following month, in November 1991, a production crew from Unsolved Mysteries arrived in Clinton, Missouri to film a reenactment of Angela's disappearance. The episode was broadcast on television the very next month, and with all that coverage, David Rader, who was the producer for the TV show, urged law enforcement not to get too excited, not right. to have their expectations too high because it could be crushed. He said that of the 49 missing person cases that the show had covered, only two had been solved mm-hmm. by the public.
That's still better than nothing. I mean, I'd take it.
Right? I actually remember seeing that show. I remember that.
Too.
That's, I guess, just because it was in Missouri, that's always stuck in my head, you know.
And she was so close to our age.
Another odd note to point out here, and I'm just going to say it. Because it doesn't really have anything, but it's odd how things work, right? So in the summer of 1992, mm-hmm. there's another big case from Missouri. You know which one that is? Springfield, Missouri.
Oh, the missing three.
Yes. The Springfield Three.
We knew something was happening because her cigarettes were gone.
Cheryl Levitt, Susie Streeter, and Stacy McCall vanished without a trace on that night in summer of 1992. Everybody was shocked, obviously. Shortly thereafter, Marcia became friends with Stacy's mother. Marcia, who was Angela's mother,
right.
became friends with Stacy McCall's mother, Janice McCall. And they ended up becoming good friends and moral support for each other, right? Again, a club that nobody ever wants to belong mm-hmm. to. The two of them were later on Oprah Winfrey, to talk about missing loved ones. They were hoping, obviously, that somebody would see the show and it would bring some
right.
new information forward. Angela's disappearance was stagnant for years. The police ruled out Jesse Rush and Marvin Chaney, those two losers that we talked about earlier, as suspects in Angela's. They couldn't find any hard evidence to link them to Cheryl's vanishing either. Now, Cheryl's was the other
girl
yes.
that went missing.
Yes. In April of 2009, new information was brought forth by the Clinton Police Department, and they provided a statement to media claiming that they had new evidence in the case, particularly of the DNA nature. But due to advancements in technology and forensic science, they never elaborated fully as to what they had found. Hopefully they found the DNA and it's just not matched anybody. And we don't know that yet. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So wrapping this all up, it's been 27 years since Angela disappeared. She would be 2 years younger than us, FYI. And there's really no more answers to her disappearance. No. They don't know what happened to her. The Hammond family still struggles, obviously, because they're missing her. They still are in contact with Rob, mm-hmm. who would have been her husband and the father of her baby. Rob,
father of their grandchild.
Yeah.
Child.
Yes. Rob went on to, marry somebody and have a family. And still to this day, they don't know what happened to Angela.
No. Okay. I thought that the composite, she did describe him though, as having a beard and everything.
Mm-hmm. And dirty.
And dirty. Then why would they even go after the two boys?
Well, I don't really know
that.
What the one of the boys looked like. I mean, the one was 15, but the other one was a little bit older. I don't know if he had a thing. I mean, they just checked it out because that is a small area
right.
and all of that occurring up there. It's not like it's a big city, you
yeah.
know?
Maybe that, no, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I guess if you want, I will provide all this background on the blog. The
no, you won't. I will do it.
But police department number and such, if anybody would have any leads
yes.
or information
Let's
about
try
it.
Try to bring Angie's family to
Some sort of peace.
I couldn't imagine that, knowing that your child's out there.
Yeah.
Not knowing where they are.
I think it would
horrible.
Almost, I would rather know that my child had been, was dead and have final closure than to not mm-hmm. know where. That's, I can't even, mm-hmm. I can't think about that.
Horrible.
All right, Jen, that's the case. So you want to tell the good people where they can find us?
Check us out. Twitter, @ Our True Crime Pod, our blog, which is up to date now. Thank you very much, Jennifer. It is ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Facebook page. Come in and talk to us. I'm really bad at keeping it up. Do it. Go to Facebook. Where else? I think that's it. We have an Instagram account, but I don't know how to use it. We're trying to.
Yeah, I use it, but...
Check out Glenn at Glenn Think Stuff Instagram. He is new. He is now a Glenn Fluencer. If you follow him on Instagram, he will tell you all the cool things to do and buy and go see because he is a Glenfluencer now.
Mm-hmm.
And don't forget, in the next couple weeks, Crime Shark podcast is going to be hitting your local podcasters. And also,
Jaws, get it.
Naptime Nancy podcast that we're excited for and we can't wait to listen.
All right. Remember, lock your doors.
Stay fresh, cheese bags. No, that's not right, is
no,
it?
No, that's not right. No. They're not cheese bags.
No. Go ahead. Again.
Okay. Remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya. But you don't know if it's northeast or northwest or...
Well, I'm going to get to that. I think it is...
True reporters can answer questions like this.
No. I know, but I looked this up and I can see it on the map. So it's above Kansas City, so it's west, right?
Northwest,
yes. See, whatever, girl. Where are we? Olathe. I'll tell you that story one day.
I'm bad with my own money. I can't imagine being...
I'm terrible. I double cashed a check.
Oh, nice. Just...
$1,600. Oops. Anyway. It put me into debt. It was terrible.
You had that crappy car. I need it because my car might break down.
Well, I'm a chicken. You know that.
I know.
But it doesn't matter. I have to talk to my friends all the time. Anyway. Trying to ease the tension, Angela, I guess, asked. No, I got to say that again. I was going to say, I guess, because it's such a small town. You would say that. You know, you'd feel.
I wouldn't. Would.
You would. I wouldn't. Oh,
hey,
heck no.
Can I help you?
Nope.
Are you missing a puppy? Oh, wait. You got candy?
Yeah. So, Rob, obviously.
Now, she described the truck to Rob on the
mm-hmm,
phone, right?
She did.
That's how we know the truck.
Yep.
And wasn't there like a.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Which I always called overalls. I guess that's
service. Coveralls is.
The long sleeves?
Coveralls is.
Coverall
is what mechanics wear so they don't get grease or anything on their body. What Michael wears on Friday
yes,
the 13th.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a coverall.
And overall.
Overalls are the bib.
Yeah, I like overalls.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dark. That was your fashion lesson for today. Thank you for attending my TED Talk.
So, I said so one more time. I'm going to shoot myself. So,
and
you ready?
No, I am listening
to you. No, it's fine. It's fine.
But I'm trying to get Nancy asked a question.
No, it's fine. So. At approximately 10 p.m.
I mean, some have to, but I. It's. There was just a girl. You guys know me. I love my animals. I'm on a cat group on Facebook. It's called, like, Cocaine Kitties or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most frequent posters was just killed in. While she was working in.
Well, a lot of times now they lock the door or they have the bulletproof glass, you know, but still, it's just.
No, this was in a small town. And
that's what I mean. Like, what if the guy looked normal and he's like, hey, can you come help me? I'd totally come.
This poster was like one of the sweetest, like, constantly posted. And
no, it's terrible.
She was gunned down. Yeah, it was awful.
Niangua? I know where this river is too, and I don't know how to say it. Niangua? Bah, that sounds like you. The Little River. Oh my God, the Little River. Little Nangua.
Again, should we look it up? Or do you want it to just be a gen and just say whatever it is?
I think it's Nangua. It's N-I-A-N, Nangua, G-U-A.
I guess look it up. I don't want to be... Nangua?
Yeah, I don't want to be that guy. You know what I mean?
It's okay when it's Russian.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This I know where this is. This is like on the way. This river goes right on the way to Springfield.
G-U-A?
How do you say?
A-I-N. G-U-A?
Yeah, it's a town too. There's big whatever, and then there's a little one. Ready? Here we go. Mm-hmm.
Nyangwa.
Oh, is that right? Nyangwa. All right.
Nyangwa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Waylon Derby. Darby. Of course.
It wasn't Waylon Jennings.
No,
correct.
It's Waylon Darby. So, of course.
And I'm not making fun of Waylon.
No. Waylon. Waylon. Remember Waylon McKay? Uh-huh. Waylon. Yeah. That was Waylon. L-A-N-D. This is Lun, like Waylon Jennings. Waylon.
I'm sure it was because of Waylon Jennings.
Oh, of course it was.
Because Sharon Kinney is the homicide
Cheryl Land.
Housewife to...
She sure is. Okay, let's go back there, Jen. Come
sorry.
On now.
Sorry.
It's okay. No, it's okay.
The name struck me.
I got you. So it was only about a month later on Wednesday, February 27th, 1999. Nope. Beep, beep. Wrong. Repeat.
Beep.
10:17. She set the stores. Alarm clock. Nope. Alarm system. Sorry.
I was going to say, wake up call.
Oh, okay.
Sure, alarm clock. This is why I have a hard time watching Dateline and 48 Hours.
I talk to him all the time.
I do too.
Plus, you gotta be a private investigator. You gotta look around. You gotta look and see what kind of window, what kind of clothes do they have on? Do they have, is it fake clothes? If it's a female, do they have makeup on? Because then it tells you, are they in prison or out of prison? And all that lets you know. Sometimes when you can figure that out, then it kind of ruins the story for you.
Yeah, but you know what? Remember when Josh
yeah, I know, but you get,
was
you,
saying the
still
jacket?
The room, though. Still the room. Like, you, that's why I said mm-hmm. You gotta look around. Hi, pretty. Your hair looks really cute, Hattie. Okay. All right.
So fat. Isn't that a great length for her hair?
Oh, it is. Really cute. It looks really cute. Summer, 1994. Just kidding. Summer, 1994. 3 years later.
Are you ready for the summer? I am.
15-year-old Jesse Rush and his half-brother, Marvin Chaney.
Do that again, because God only knows what they were doing. I think they're bowling upstairs.
Bowling for Dollars. Do you remember that show on Saturdays?
That's why we have the kick-ass Bowling Hall of Fame.
That is right. That's right. I forgot about that. Mm-hmm. Come to St. Louis and come to see the cards and stay for the Bowling Hall of Fame Museum.
I just noticed your shaved off eyebrow. It looks good.
It looks terrible. Right. I didn't color it in today. Can you believe that? Am I stupid or what?
Oh, I thought it was the other side.
No, it's this one right there. There's a little circle. See
oh,
it?
I thought it was this side.
Oh, God. Yeah. I have tiny eyebrows. I'm not very hairy.
Wait till you see Harper's.
Went bad?
She did the gangster thing, and then she claimed that it was wrong.
It's just hard to fathom.
I don't get it. I think that's why I like... Okay,
really?
I can't even talk.
Yeah. No.
Finding Your Kid did something like this?
No. No. Yeah. No, I can, but yeah.
Did Hayden kill somebody? Is that what
no,
the
but,
trash bags were for?
Yeah. I just got rid of them. I'm like, hey, I can't take it anymore, dude. I've told you how many times to clean your room, so you're going out with the trash.
Mm-hmm.
And he screamed a lot, but whatever. He's quieted down overnight. So.
Thank God.
Okay. Many more abductions and unsolved crimes that haven't been solved.
Unsolved crimes? Wait, so this
now,
kid...
I gotta say it again. I gotta say it correctly.
I'm gonna do the whole paragraph again.
I do the whole paragraph again. Okay, so...
Now, I like the name crimes.
3 years later, in April...
He was sentenced, right?
Just hold on.
Okay, but it takes 3 years, so I was just wondering.
It's a story. I'm telling you a story. I sit back. 3 years later, April 1997, Jesse...
Ulysses never took this long, anymore.
Jesse Rush and Marvin... I can go really slow. This is how I drive when people piss me off behind me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to slow down. Here we go.
Denver votes to weigh decriminalization of magic mushrooms.
Magic mushrooms are going to be legal?
They're voting on it.
Are you kidding me?
I'm going to have to move to Denver.
I don't know about that. Marijuana, I agree with. But then mushrooms.